Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
Your federal government is now officially shut down. Since Congress failed to pass a spending bill by the September 30th deadline, funding stops for many government services. This occurred because House Republicans are refusing to approve any spending bill to keep the government operating unless it includes taking away all funding from federal health care reforms, known as Obamacare. Democrats control the Senate, which has refused to approve such a measure, and President Obama has said he would veto it even if the Senate passed it, so the stalemate continues. So how might this impact you or your family? Up to 1 million federal workers have been furloughed, off without pay. That is expected to impact defense contractors also, which is a major industry in San Diego, and have a ripple effect through the economy if this goes on for very long. Members of Congress, however, will still get paid since they exempted themselves. Federal air traffic controllers will remain on the job at airports. So will firefighters with the U.S. Forest Service for now. Social Security, unemployment, and disability checks will still be issued, but field offices for Social Security and others will have only limited services, so new applications could be delayed. Military personnel must remain on duty, but if the shutdown lasts past October 15th, their paychecks could be delayed. About half of all the civilian employees with the Defense Department, however, will be furloughed and they will not be paid. Federal courts are open for now, but may stop hearing cases if the shutdown goes past October 15th. Food stamps will be funded through October, but one of the cruelest cuts of all is that all funds for the Women and Infant Children Nutrition Program have been cut immediately, meaning some women and children may simply go hungry. Now, the Medicare program will continue, but you can expect longer waits since 52% of the staff will be furloughed. Flu shots won't be happening either, funded by the federal government, since the Centers for Disease Control's annual seasonal flu program is closed. Major federal websites have gone dark. That includes the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the U.S. Forest Service, the National Park Service, and some others. All national parks and national forests are closed if you're planning a vacation, including trails and campgrounds in Cleveland National Forest right here in East County. E-Verify is also offline, which enables businesses to check whether job applicants can legally work in the United States. Now, Postal Service and passports will not be affected since those are not funded by our federal tax dollars. They're funded through stamps and fees collected for passports. Now, if you're buying a house, there's bad news. You can expect delays indefinitely in getting any government-backed mortgages, such as FHA or VA loans approved, until this shutdown ends. The Federal Housing Administration guarantees about 30% of all the home mortgages nationwide. Action on government-backed loans for small businesses are suspended. The Food and Drug Administration is also suspending routine food safety inspections, though meat inspections will continue. Grants for the Head Start programs, which help poor children, will not be renewed. The IRS has shut down all taxpayer services, including toll-free helplines. Most Border Patrol and Homeland Security personnel, however, will remain on the job, and green card applications will still be processed by the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. Funding for refugee services is up in the air, and petitions for political asylum and immigration are expected to be delayed as well. Many Veteran Affairs services will continue, but appeals over disability benefits will not be decided until the shutdown is over with. OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, will stop inspecting workplaces for health and safety, except in cases of imminent danger. If the shutdown goes for a full month, the U.S. would default on its federal debt, causing foreign investors to lose confidence in America's economic strength and its ability to pay back loans. That could trigger higher interest rates from foreign lenders and stop foreign investors from buying U.S. bonds. Now, we decided to go out on the streets in East County and find some real people who are actually affected by this federal shutdown. Now, I'm here with Dale. Dale is over 65. He's battling cancer. He's had a heart attack. And he's just recently qualified for food stamps. Dale, what's going to happen? How concerned are you if this shutdown continues?
I'll know in a few days if there's still funding for EBT, but I'm worried that if the government shutdown lasts much longer, that I won't be getting food stamps.
How important is that to you? What happens if it doesn't come in?
Well, I'm on a fixed income, so I guess I'll have to cut food out of my budget.
I'm here with Pat Wenger. And Pat, tell us how the shutdown is affecting you.
Well, it's more of a disappointment, but we were scheduled to go on the Phantom Ranch Grand Canyon mule ride, where you go down into the canyon, into Phantom Ranch, mm-hmm. take a 5-hour mule ride. But I was scheduled to do that on Thursday, and we were notified on the 1st that that was not going to occur. And we've been on the waiting list since October of 2012.
That must be really disappointing.
It is disappointing, but we were hoping to do the same trip, do it for next year, but that is now booked.
How does that make you feel?
That our government's not doing their job.
What message would you send to our members of Congress?
Get to work.
Maybe those mules and the members of Congress have a personality trait in common.
I think they do.
Do you have one side or the other that you blame in this? Do you think that...
I think it's pretty obvious that we can blame both of them, but one more so than the other at this point. Just get in there and do your job so the rest of us can go to work.
A red flag warning has been issued for high fire danger this weekend. The warning will be in effect from 11 a.m. Friday morning through 8 p.m. on Sunday evening for most of San Diego County. Santa Ana winds are forecast to sweep into our area starting Thursday night with sustained winds of 25 to 40 miles an hour and local gusts as high as 65 miles an hour in canyons and mountain passes. Please use caution and avoid activities that could spark a fire during this hot, dry, and windy weather period. And now it's time for a Crime Beat report. Residents in Campo are voicing outrage after the state announced a plan to release a violent sexual predator from a mental hospital into the Campo community. 70-year-old Douglas Badger has been convicted of kidnapping and raping young men who were hitchhiking. He's also been convicted of sexually assaulting a 16-year-old girl. He has been diagnosed as a sexual sadist. He served several terms in prison and spent 18 years in a state mental hospital, but now the state thinks it's safe to let him loose. Claudia Miller-Bragg lives half a mile from where Badger is proposed to be released. She says, "A lot of my neighbors are outraged about this. We are tired of everything being dumped in East County. Power links, solar fields, wind turbines, and now violent offenders." Residents are organizing a protest at 6 o'clock in the evening on Wednesday in front of the home at 30033 Hartfell Road in Campo, where the state wants to release Badger. The site is just a block from a school bus pickup site and also close to schools. Supervisor Diane Jacob is also speaking out. She issued a press release, which reads, "Given his violent history as a serial sexual predator, Douglas Badger forfeited his freedom long ago and should be locked up for good. Especially outrageous is that this vile man would be housed at a location in Campo that is only 4 miles from two schools and a mile from a park where children gather and play." Supervisor Jacob noted that in recent years, other sexual predators placed in rural East County have violated terms of their release and wound up sent back to a mental hospital. Rather than dumping Badger in the backcountry, the state should house him next to Donovan State Prison, where several sexually violent predators have previously been located, Jacob concluded. A hearing on Badger's proposed placement will be held on November 15th at 9 a.m. in San Diego Superior Court, Department 28 in downtown San Diego. Now, the public can also submit written comments between October 8th and 18th to sdsafe@doj.ca.gov. That's sdsafe@doj.ca.gov. You can also send in written comments or speak at the hearing. For details on this, visit our website at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Willkommen! La Mesa is hosting its annual Oktoberfest this weekend in La Mesa's downtown village, complete with lively music, crafts, games, and plenty of German and American food. If you're coming to the festivities, you can visit KNSJ and East County Magazine's booth and tell us what you'd like to hear on your community radio. We'll be set up in front of All Things Bright and British at the corner of La Mesa Boulevard and 4th Street in the heart of the Oktoberfest. So stop by and say Guten Tag!
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. One of the biggest events in East County, Oktoberfest, takes place this weekend in the village of La Mesa on both sides of the trolley tracks on La Mesa Boulevard. Everything from oom-pa-pa to classic rock. October 4th through October 6th will feature a variety of musical entertainment from an authentic German band and classic rock and roll. This event, which is over 35 years old, has gone from a small street fair to a three-day festival with over 250 vendors offering goods and services to over 200,000 attendees. Enjoy great food, lots of children's activities, entertainment, and of course, good old German brats and cold beer. East County Magazine and KNSJ will have a booth right in front of All Things Bright and British on the corner of La Mesa Boulevard and 4th Street if you wish to stop by and tell us what you'd like to hear on the radio. Another Oktoberfest sponsored by the German-American Societies of El Cajon, the El Cajon Oktoberfest continues for another weekend, beginning on Friday, October 4th through Sunday, October 6th. Included in the festivities for this family-friendly event are a band from Germany in traditional dress called Guggenbach Baum, authentic German food such as bratwurst, ox on the spit, potato salad, potato pancakes, sauerkraut, red cabbage, and a variety of German pastries and pretzels. Plus, there are games and activities for the whole family with a kids zone and vendors and crafts booths. El Cajon's Oktoberfest is located at the German-American Societies of San Diego on Mollison Avenue in El Cajon. Saturday evening, October 5th, is the second annual Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation's Art in the Park. Featured art from a minimum of 45 award-winning artists will be on display and for sale, with over 100 pieces of nature-related art featuring a variety of painting styles, ceramics, photography, and sculpture. CBS 8 meteorologist and lifestyle reporter Sean Stiles and Mission Publishing Group publisher Jim Matifer return as honorary co-chairs for this event in the Visitor Center from 6 to 9 p.m. Enjoy an evening of fine art, fine wine, fine cheese, and fine chocolate. Entertainment will be provided by members of the San Diego Native American Flute Circle, followed by the Caprice Strings Trio. The San Diego Astronomy Association will have telescopes on the terrace for viewing the stars. The Mulvaney family is sponsoring the third annual Jim Mulvaney's Concert on the Green to benefit Noah Homes Incorporated on Saturday, October 5th from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Campo Road in Spring Valley near Steel Canyon High School. The concert will feature the Irish music of the Tim Foley Band. Wright's Field Nature Walks in Alpine. On Saturday, October 5th, from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., another first Saturday nature walk will be held, with the theme, Restoring the Endangered San Diego Thorn Mint. Sponsored by Backcountry Land Trust, meet at Wright's Field on Dillon Drive in Alpine. As part of Julian's Apple Days celebration, a two-day Apple Days festival will be held Saturday, October 5th and 6th at Mangini Winery, featuring apple displays, music and dancing, an antique tractor display, children's games and activities, gold panning demonstrations, food and merchandise, vendors, contests, and of course, apple pie. The event runs from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., both Saturday and Sunday. The History Alive lecture series, sponsored by the Lemon Grove Historical Society, continues on Thursday, October 3rd at 7 p.m. in the H. Lee House Cultural Center in Lemon Grove. Jack Shelver, the city's first city manager, will look back at the heady days of early cityhood in 1977. Jack retired to Julian in 1994, where he serves as president of the Fire Board, but he spent 17 years as Lemon Grove's chief executive. He oversaw the coming of the trolley and the recreation of the original train depot and more. The 23rd annual Mountain Bike Benefit Ride is Sunday, October 6th, beginning at 8 a.m. at Los Vaqueros Group Camp at Cuyamaca Rancho State Park on Highway 79. The event is a fundraiser for the Cuyamaca Rancho State Park Interpretive Association, which assists the state park with trail building, maintenance, and interpretive projects to benefit the public. The ride features an 18-mile course on fire roads and single tracks throughout the park. Cards will be handed out at 5 locations along the route. Prizes will be awarded based on the cards. Ticket price includes a hearty spaghetti lunch. Now for our preview of upcoming events, which require some planning or purchase of tickets. Wine Tasting in Warner Springs features 5 wineries of the North Mountain Wine Trail, and it will be held on Saturday, November 9th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at 5 wineries. The event includes wines paired with a full menu of gourmet foods. Live music will be performed at each site. The wineries are all within 2 miles of each other and include La Sarissima, Orin, Shadow Mountain, Hawk Watch, and Sierra Roble. Tickets must be purchased in advance. Next is a Fair Trade Gift Fair held on October 13th in La Mesa. A wide variety of handcrafted, fairly traded items will be available from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at St. Martin of Tours Parish Hall on El Cajon Boulevard in La Mesa. Visitors can savor samples of Fair Trade certified ice cream and coffee while perusing gift items such as handmade baskets, jewelry, clothing accessories, and an abundance of gift items. Also available for purchase will be Fair Trade chocolate, coffee, tea, bananas, and soda. The designation of Fair Trade signifies that artisans and farmers in the poorest areas of the world have received fair, livable wages for their product or ingredients. In addition, certain standards must be met in the production process. These include protecting the environment, building economic sustainability, and providing opportunities for education and health care for families. Young children are protected from forced labor. The 4th annual Spring Valley Tailgate and Barbecue Festival will take place on Sunday, October 20th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Troy Street, between Bancroft Avenue and Central Avenue, initiated by the Spring Valley Chamber of Commerce and Cali Comfort Restaurant. The goal of the festival is to raise money for youth sports programs in Spring Valley. Organizers hope to have 30 amateur barbecue teams participating in this year's competition. The teams will be competing in 5 categories: tri-tip, pork ribs, chicken, best decorated tailgate team, and more. The event also features games, activities, and live music, in addition to barbecue tastings. Visit www.springvalleybarbecuefestivalbbq.com for vendor booth information and more. The City of La Mesa will hold its 4th annual Senior Expo on Thursday, October 10th, at the La Mesa Community Center on Memorial Drive in La Mesa during the hours of 8:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. All of these activities and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section on www.eastcountymagazine.org. Keep listening for new fall events, including Halloween activities, on Destination East County. That's all for this week. See you around, East County.
Observing Meatless Monday is not only good for your health and animals. A new report says it's also good for the environment. The study from the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization reaffirms what others have claimed, that livestock production is a major contributor to climate-changing pollution. Jeff Orm Evans with the Humane Society International says globalization and huge concentrated factory farms are the reason meat is cheaper and people are eating more of it. He says 70 billion land animals are raised for food every year around the globe, a number that is unprecedented.
So it's really a wake-up call and confirms what we already know, that the sector is a huge contributor to climate change, and we need to start figuring out what to do about it.
Orm Evans says there are several ways that today's massive animal farms are impacting the environment. One major problem is that having a large number of animals on a very small amount of land creates a concentrated amount of animal waste.
There can be really bad effects to the waterways. There have been fish die-offs. And in addition, there are the climate change effects.
He says other contributing factors to pollution are gases produced from manure storage, fertilizer production, and in some cases, deforestation to create more pasture, as well as the energy required to transport animals and meat and dairy products. While the report offers some solutions to the pollution caused by livestock, Orem Evans says there are steps that individuals can take, including buying locally produced foods and eating less meat. Giving up meat just one day a week, he adds, is the equivalent of driving about 1,000 fewer miles a year. For California News Service, I'm Monique Coppola.
This is a special announcement from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. Community leaders and Cedar Fire survivors will dedicate a historic memorial to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the worst wildfire in California history. The ceremony will take place on October 26th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at River Park Fire Station in Lakeside. The event will also honor first responders and celebrate fire survivor families' lifelong connection as guests pause to reflect, remember, and reconnect. There will be exhibits, disaster prevention program information, book signings by Sandra Younger, the author of The Fire Outside My Window, a VFW band, food and beverages, a moment of remembrance, and appreciation for community support. Speakers will include Supervisor Diane Jacob, Fire Chief Andy Parr from Lakeside, David Castle from the Cedar Fire Rebuilding Resource Group, and presentations will be made from the offices of Senator Joel Anderson, Assemblyman Brian Jones, and Congressman Duncan Hunter. The Cedar Fire was the largest wildland fire in California history. It started 25 miles east of San Diego in the Cleveland National Forest when a hunter became lost and lit a small fire to signal for help on the evening of October 25, 2003. It quickly spread out of control. By the time containment was declared on October 28, the Cedar Fire had destroyed 280,278 acres, 2,820 buildings, and killed 15 people, nearly all of them in Lakeside's Wildcat Canyon. Damage occurred across the county, but nowhere was the toll more devastating than Lakeside, where the firestorm roared through the night, catching many people unaware of the approaching inferno. The Cedar Fire continues to hold the tragic record as the state's worst wildfire in total acreage burned, homes destroyed, and lives lost. For more information on the October 26th memorial event, you can visit www.lakesidefire.com. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This is Miriam Raftery, and I've got some good news today for East County veterans. On last week's show, we reported that our investigation into county veteran services found that rural veterans were not getting their fair share of services. This matter was brought to our attention by Claudia Millerbragg, a reader who has been battling bureaucracy, trying to bring more veteran services representatives out to rural East County. East County Magazine's investigation found that veterans in wealthy coastal areas and North County communities have been getting better access to veteran services than those in rural areas or inner-city communities. Wealthy places like La Jolla have veteran services representatives visit them 12 days every month. Claremont Mesa has services 5 days a week, while Oceanside, Escondido, and Chula Vista all have services anywhere from a dozen to 20 days every single month. There are also visits to coastal communities that are very close together, such as Carlsbad and Encinitas. And yet, in East County, there are no services at all east of La Mesa, and a representative only comes there on Fridays. That means a disabled veteran or any veteran in places like Jacumba, Borrego, or Julian could have a drive of 2 to 4 hours round trip or more in places that have no public transportation or where roads may not even be passable in winter weather. This is even more troubling and surprising because East County has the highest concentration of veterans in San Diego County, according to Supervisor Jacob. Now, after our story ran, Supervisor Jacob's office contacted us. A staffer informed us that Supervisor Jacob held a meeting last week with County Veteran Services and told them she wants more equitable staffing. The staffer informed East County Magazine that Supervisor Jacob plans to introduce a measure to the supervisors that would bring County Veteran Services representatives to county libraries throughout our region, including those most rural areas. The county representatives help veterans access services such as counseling, VA loans, educational, health, and job training benefits that are available to veterans. These are the men and women who served our nation honorably. Now they are hoping that the rest of the county supervisors will approve Supervisor Jacobs' proposal when it's introduced and assure that our veterans will be treated with the honor and dignity that they deserve.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I'd like to talk to you now about why we call fall our planting season in Southern California. Obviously, we don't want to plant in August and September when it is so hot and so miserable. So what would we want to plant now and why? Well, for now, even though the rains may not have started, and I'm talking about October, November, December, the nights are cooler, the days are cooler, we don't have those August heat waves of 100 degrees, and once the Santa Anas are through, it's a great time to get things in the ground. What's the best thing to plant now? Now is the time to put in your trees, your native plants, your fall flowers that you pick up at the local nursery, and not to plant tropicals. We don't put in any tropicals now. By tropicals, I mean all the plants you think of when you think of Hawaii, everything you think of when you think of house plants that can grow outdoors. These are all tropical plants that are subject to being frosted. They don't like cold winter weather, so don't put them in the ground now. If you are in a very frost-prone area, then what you don't want to do is plant your citrus, your avocados, and anything tender right now. Think about where the plants originated. You don't have to look up every single plant that you want to grow, but if something is called Japanese something or other, that means that it will get by with cold weather, and you don't have to worry about planting it now. If it's something that's called Hawaiian something, I would be very leery of planting it in the fall, because it's probably highly subject to freezes and frosts. Why would you want to plant natives now, and why would you want to put in shrubs and landscape plants now? The plants that you put in now will not show much visible growth during the winter time, but underground, all sorts of exciting things will be happening. The roots will be growing. The plants will be sitting there waiting to get started in the spring when it first gets to be hot weather. They'll take off like gangbusters. Maybe you went to the Water Conservation Garden and you saw the Chinese pistache trees. If you haven't been there to see them, I recommend you go. In the fall, they turn the most glorious color of red and orange. It's hard to describe how beautiful they are. This is also the time of year when you see the liquid ambers showing off, the sweet gum trees. They look great right now. How do you know you're going to buy one that looks wonderful for you? Now's the time. Go to the nursery now and look at the tree colors of the ones that you like and pick ones that change the colors that you like. There will be some variation in your yard because possibly your yard doesn't get as cold or isn't quite as wet or has a different kind of soil than the nursery has, but it's the best way to get the tree that you want for some gorgeous fall foliage. Why am I not telling you to plant your fruit trees now? Because you can save so much money if you wait until January. That's when the nurseries and the big box stores bring in the bare root plants. And when we get closer to that season, we'll have another session on here, and I'll give you all the instructions to have a great start on trees that will cost you $13 if you buy them in December or January, but they'll cost you $35 or $40 if you buy them in May.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Will California soon be going to pot? Well, we'll find out. The Secretary of State's office has announced that a ballot initiative is being circulated for signatures that would decriminalize marijuana and hemp use. It includes the possession, cultivation, transportation, and distribution, including recreational use of marijuana. Now, it goes further. It would also allow case-by-case reviews of people who've been convicted of nonviolent marijuana offenses or who are currently charged with them. It also would let the legislature enact laws to tax and regulate the plant and allow doctors to prescribe pot regardless of a patient's age. It would ban state or local governments from enforcing federal marijuana laws. Now, of course, marijuana use is still illegal under federal laws, so even if this were passed, there's the potential that people could face federal charges down the road. Now, this is bound to be a controversial measure. There'll be opposition, as in the past, no doubt, from law enforcement and support from advocates of medical marijuana and recreational users. Some of the things yet to be determined would be issues such as how do you determine what's a safe level for driving? There's concerns certainly about that. If approved, California would be the third state to legalize the recreational use of marijuana after Washington and Colorado that have already done so. Now, Californians rejected a similar initiative back in 2010, Prop 19. However, a new poll by the Public Policy Institute of California indicates those attitudes may be shifting. 52% of adults and a total of 60% of likely voters now say that they favor legalized marijuana. Now, it will be up to the voters to decide whether or not this gets enough signatures to put it on the ballot in 2014. And if it does qualify, voters will then decide whether or not it's high time for California to legalize marijuana. For KNSJ and East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
Welcome in! La Mesa is hosting its annual Oktoberfest this weekend in La Mesa's downtown village, complete with lively music, crafts, games, and plenty of German and American food. If you're coming to the festivities, you can visit KNSJ and East County Magazine's booth and tell us what you'd like to hear on your community radio. We'll be set up in front of All Things Bright and British at the corner of La Mesa Boulevard and 4th Street in the heart of the Oktoberfest. So stop by and say Guten Tag!
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery, and my newsmaker today is Eldonna Lay with the El Cajon Historical Society. She is the past president of the organization and the curator of the Knox House Museum. She's also the author of a special two-part book series, Valley of Opportunity, about El Cajon's colorful history, published in the city's centennial year. Eldonna, welcome to the show.
Delighted to be here.
Now, the city is in the midst of celebrating its centennial, but of course its history dates back much farther than that. Eldonna, can you tell us about some of the area's earliest inhabitants?
The first inhabitants, of course, were the ancestors of our current Indian tribes, the Kumeyaay Nation, the Saquons, all of whom are still making news and exciting news of events and recent purchases or acquisitions of lands that in the paper they mention are going to be kept as wild lands. Most impressive. So they inhabited the place first and crisscrossed the El Cajon Valley on their way from the mountains to the ocean.
And that goes back many thousands of years.
Yes. They're saying 12,000, but there are those anthropologists and archaeologists who say that it could be closer to 15.
And that would be older than most any of the ancient civilizations, the ancient Romans, Egyptians. Who were the first non-Native Americans to come to our region, and what brought them here, Eldonna?
The first that we know of now, as a historian, I have to say, we never know everything. Sometimes we think we do, but we don't. The first that we know about were the Chinese, actually.
Really?
Who came in the 16th century. Murray Lee has written of that. He is affiliated with the Chinese Museum downtown. And so they have found remains of the boats and the things that were in those boats that the Chinese brought here. And they went on down into Mexico and Central America and South America. And they're discovering more all the time.
Were they in El Cajon?
We don't know yet because we haven't looked for it yet. We don't know how far inland they came down here.
And then the Spanish came along.
The explorers and made maps of the area, the first maps of the area. Then they were followed in the 1800s by American explorers.
But before the Americans, you had the Spanish priests who had some interesting uses for the El Cajon Valley. Tell us about that.
When they had started their agricultural work in the valley, they also started looking around into the other valleys and the highlands to see what they could grow there. And in El Cajon, the valley, they planted grapes, which was the first vineyards in the area that were commercially grown. There were wild grapes.
And those grapes were grown for the sacramental wines served in church.
Yes, indeed.
Now, there was also a lot of mining going on. That's a little known but very colorful corner of El Cajon's history. But I understand that after gold was discovered in Julian, the rush was on and they were looking for it everywhere. Tell us how that impacted El Cajon.
It had a huge impact, mainly because there had been so many other gold and silver strikes throughout the world. So it became a little safer if it was here on the American soil. And so they came in by boat, most of them by ship.
They went around Cape Horn by clipper ship. That is quite a journey. You'd have to really want to come to California to go through all of that.
Absolutely. It was a rough trip. Some people walked across or rode across the peninsula in Panama.
Mm-hmm.
But this was before 1915.
No canal yet.
Which, incidentally, we will be celebrating next year in Balboa Park, because Balboa Park was built to celebrate the building of the Panama Canal.
Fascinating.
It's going to be a huge celebration.
So they found gold in El Cajon. Give us a general idea of where that was and how successful were those ventures.
They were very successful, and some of those gold mines remain here. There
really?
Are belts of them. Upper Chase Avenue had a number of them, one large enough to have cars and tracks going into them. But during the 30s and early 40s, Franklin Delano Roosevelt took us off the gold standard, and that depleted the demand for gold at that time. So they closed the mines.
Now, how did the gold mines impact the community of El Cajon? That must have been quite a boost for the economy.
I honestly don't know about the boost, for it because a lot of outsiders came in to work on this, too.
Mm-hmm.
There was one family, the Parsons family, and they're still in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, my husband and I purchased some of their property, and we have the entry to one of the gold mines on our property.
So you're living on a gold mine. How fascinating.
The funny part of that is my husband's from Helena, Montana, and his house there was built on top of one of the original gold mines.
Interesting.
Yes. So
now, that's not the only thing in El Cajon, sitting on a gold mine. You've told me that one of the elementary schools, Fuerte Elementary School, is also on top of a gold mine. Is that true?
That's my gold mine. They're on top of.
Oh, okay. All right.
And there are a couple of stories about that. Number one, the gold mine is still there. The tunnels run under the septic tank of the school, which makes it a little unappealing.
You would think, with all the school funding crisis, maybe they want to do some drilling there.
That's well, it's a thought. However, when they were scraping out the lower playground, the man running the skip loader at the time ran into a tunnel that was still stuffed with dynamite. And he was not badly hurt, but he ended up being the absolute first patient to arrive at the emergency room in the brand new Grossmont Hospital.
My goodness, that's amazing. You've told me that people came from around the world. A lot of people talk about the boom in immigration going on in El Cajon today in East County, but it didn't just start yesterday. Tell us a little bit about who some of the folks were that were coming here.
There was advertisement in Europe about El Cajon and La Mesa and some of the other communities. We were looking to claim America as our own. I should say the government was, and so they were encouraging pioneering and settlement. And what's most important, I think, is that El Cajon was settled after the Civil War. It makes all of the difference in the world because everything changed after that.
Mm-hmm.
So we did have some Southern families who came by the Southern route. It was opened again after the Civil War.
1870s?
1864. 1905
Which
and after. Yes. Mm-hmm. And so Campo was settled. And we didn't have a Burma border with Mexico at the time. Mm-hmm. So we had American families living down in what is now Mexico. They had huge ranches. So that's kind of a southern settlement. The people coming by ship, of course, came from different places. A lot of New Englanders came here.
Now, what was behind the move to incorporate and actually become a city 100 years ago?
Well, that was 1912, and there were financial reasons, and also it gave settlers, and the people who came here were settlers, not pioneers. It's important to remember that people who go somewhere and they're not sure where they're going or what they're going to find because there aren't maps yet, those are pioneers. People knew about San Diego and later El Cajon because people had been coming to San Diego since it was owned by Mexico.
So when they incorporated, one of the first things they did was outlaw a lot of the things those fun-loving miners had been enjoying and ranchers out there. Tell us a little bit about some of the first acts of the very first El Cajon Council.
Well, the first thing they did, I understand, was to stop horse racing on Main Street.
So our racing history didn't start with Del Mar, folks.
We were getting a little too elegant to have that sort of thing going on. Later on, there was a huge hullabaloo over the number of saloons that were there, and they were drawing people who came deliberately to get drunk, and they were causing a lot of trouble.
And what goes around comes around. El Cajon just recently enacted an ordinance cracking down on alcohol sales. It's amazing how these issues echo the issues of the past.
Yes, it is.
Now, I understand there were also some early ordinances addressing pigs and chickens. Tell us about that.
In the city, people had chickens. That didn't seem to be a problem right away. And I think recently that came up, too.
They outlawed it 100 years ago. And they just recently legalized backyard chicken owners or you can come out of the closet.
Talk about cycles, yes. And
what about the pigs?
Oh, the pigs. Pigs were grown out in Las Cochas. The Mission Padres had kept pigs there because it forms a natural basin. It was easy to keep them in. And so they would run pigs down Main Street, too, on the way to the slaughterhouses.
Pigs down Main Street.
Yes.
That's amazing. I didn't know that. Now, the first volume of your book, Valley of Opportunity, dealt with the city's first 75 years after incorporation. And your next book will deal with the last 25 years. When will that be out?
It'll be ready for Christmas.
What are some of the biggest changes that have occurred in El Cajon in the last 25 years?
El Cajon is a microcosm of, first, the United States, and then the rest of the world. And our whole world has changed in the last 25 years with the immediate ability to know what's going on and to watch it as it is happening. So we are influenced far more. And then when we began getting people from other countries here, we began taking them in as refugees, we had immediate reactions and settlement issues. The first group came in, I believe it was in the 80s when the boat people came in.
Vietnam.
And it was at that time 72 languages were being, or dialects, were being spoken in the schools. It was totally unexpected.
Huge challenge for the teachers.
Very, very challenging. I was with the school district at that time. And to see all of these adorable children coming in from all over, not knowing English, and the families discovering refrigerators for the first time, it was an acclimation that really, really challenged everybody, particularly because when they got here, they had been through terrible, terrible times. Many were badly traumatized.
And now we have many of the Iraqi refugees. I believe there's about 50,000 Iraqi Chaldeans alone living in the East County area, most of them right here at El Cajon.
Absolutely.
And Africans. I just interviewed someone today about how many more African refugees are winding up in El Cajon now.
And surrounding areas, Somalis, yes. And I think it's interesting, too, that you see that in the churches. We have an Egyptian church and a Syrian church and a Lebanese church. And they're all Christian churches, but they come from the original area where Christ was born and where Christianity began.
Now, how has the evolution of the aerospace industry had its impacts out here in El Cajon?
Well, a lot of the people who worked there, my husband being an editor at General Dynamics, they lived out here. Also, in the industrial area, parts were made for the space vehicles, and other companies handle things for other kinds of vehicles.
What kind of growth have we seen in Gillespie Field in the last 25 years?
I'm not one to speak for them, but it is fascinating to go on their tours, to go out there for dinner and watch the action going on, partially at least because of East County Economic Development Council has been in the stage of growing, and I think there will be considerable more growth.
Now, what are some of the changes that are in the works right now for El Cajon? And if you want to look in your crystal ball a little bit, what are some of the things that you would like to see over the next 100 years?
One of the things I admire are places in San Diego that have been remade, taking advantage of the newcomers here. Little Italy, I think, is a perfect example of modern and old and new and experimental. It is such an exciting place architecturally, with glass buildings tucked in between and behind the old building. There's just an elegant charm and an energy that you get when you mix those things together.
Yes, they celebrate the heritage of these
absolutely,
newcomers.
Absolutely. You know, and we're fortunate enough to have Iraqi restaurants and other kinds of restaurants in town because it really, really broadens the palate of people. The food is delicious, incidentally. It's marvelous to have those newcomers start sharing through their businesses
now,
with
us. Now, speaking
of
restaurants down there, I understand some changes are in the works. One change that we've certainly seen in recent years in El Cajon is an evolution of the downtown. There was a time when it was very blighted. There were a lot of boarded-up buildings, the old Pussycat Theater, X-rated stuff down there, and I understand that the last vestige of that, the F Street Bookstore, has closed its doors. And what's going to happen now with that area down there?
Well, I have to tell you, I am very, very proud to have been on that original board of the CDC when it came in, and later I was on the city's design review commission, and we saw all of those plans coming in, and we got to vote on and suggest improvements so that it would fit into the community. And through all of that, Gabe Marujo, who owns Por Favor and the Downtown Cafe, has not slowed down one bit. He believes, and his sister, believe so much in downtown El Cajon that they have just purchased the F Street Bookstore and the store, the business across the street. I'm not sure what they're going to be doing there.
We're all looking forward to seeing what that is. It's kind of a big secret right now. We've also seen a lot of other storefronts down there change hands, many of them by some of the immigrants, Iraqi immigrants. There's an Egyptian-owned store, at least one that's Mexican-owned, some others. So it really is a city of immigrants these days.
And it's an international thing that gives it a life and a sparkle that we didn't have before.
Can you foresee a day when we might see something like a New Babylonia or a New Babylon district that would be something that would draw tourists, sort of like San Francisco's Chinatown, or for that matter, the new Little Saigon business district that just got its designation in San Diego along El Cajon Boulevard?
I think it would be marvelous to have that, because then we can celebrate the old, what we're used to, all the new things that America is turning out, and learn something about our foregoers in on another continent.
Fascinating. Now, I understand that there is a new multicultural festival of some sort in the works.
That is in the process, and the city is perfect to put it on. We've had good experiences in the past with international events, so there's great promise and sparkle in that.
And without you losing the Western heritage and the Native American heritage, of course, have so long been a part of El Cajon's history and culture and its very colorful past.
And we have that with the Olaf Weekhorst Museum. If you like cowboy things, and I understand from an agent friend of mine that cowboy things are coming back on TV. There will be a number of programs.
More Westerns.
Yes. And so the music and the plots maybe a little bit different, modernized, but they will be on TV and hopefully radio. I would hate to see Western music in its original form be lost.
Yes. For those not familiar with the Wiegetorus Museum, Wiegetorus was one of the premier Western artists of his day. His works hung in the White House and
the Vatican.
John Wayne owned them. He was quite renowned. It's quite a marvelous museum out there of not only his own works, but other Western artists right here in downtown El Cajon.
May I also say that his paintings were hung in the White House under four or five different presidents. Mm-hmm. So he...
Bipartisan support.
There we go.
Well, Aldana, it's been a delight to have you on the show. I'm really looking forward to reading your new book when it comes out and hearing more about what's going to be happening the rest of the year for the centennial, just as soon as those plans are rolled out.
I'm looking forward to them, too. Nobody knows how it's going to end, so I'm looking forward to the excitement of that.
Now, if people want to come down and take a tour of the Knox House Museum, tell us just a little bit about the Knox House Museum and how people can get more information about that.
Knox House Museum is named after Amaziah Knox, and his picture is on the standards of the El Cajon sign, and a new huge photograph of him, graphic, is on the outside of the museum, which is on the corner of Parks and Magnolia. It's the kind of gaudy 1800s kind of house that he built himself.
And what was his role in El Cajon's history?
He was the founder. He was the first one to build a commercial building in El Cajon, and it was for the miners who were headed for Julian. Hmm. And so we figured that in those days you didn't have to have beds for travelers. They could sleep in their roll-ups. And so we figure about seven men could sleep in one of the three bedrooms that were in the
Knox
place.
Knox House Hotel at one time.
Exactly. It started out that way. And so the building has in it furnishings donated by settler families. And it shows what the settlers brought with them. Because they were an upper middle class group that settled El Cajon. The Bostonia group was socially a bit higher than that. And they had on Saturday nights their own clubhouse, the forerunner of the Bostonian ballroom. And they dressed formally in tuxedos, gowns. I remember one elderly gentleman describing how, because his fingers were so little, his mother had him button up her long elbow-length gloves to go to dinner and dance at the Bostonia ballroom.
Truly a different world.
Well, you know, people come here and they want to recreate the places they left. And that's what today's immigrants want, too. And so we are all a country of immigrants, and the changes that come through that make us all richer.
Those are very profound words. We're going to end there, and thank you very much, Aldana, for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. A red flag warning has been issued for high fire danger this weekend. The warning will be in effect from 11 a.m. Friday morning through 8 p.m. on Sunday evening for most of San Diego County. Santa Ana winds are forecast to sweep into our area starting Thursday night with sustained winds of 25 to 40 miles an hour and local gusts as high as 65 miles an hour in canyons and mountain passes. Please use caution and avoid activities that could spark a fire during this hot, dry, and windy weather period.
This is a public service announcement from CAL FIRE. CAL FIRE reminds you to properly store gasoline. Gasoline should only be stored in an approved safety can away from heat sources. Never store gasoline in the house, garage, or basement. Any spark or pilot light can quickly ignite fumes from gasoline. When invisible gasoline vapors explode, the intensity can engulf a garage with flames in seconds. Be fire safe, not sorry.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.